a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Kaitagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. Wendy's always waiting for me to mess up.
This might be a giggly show.
No, it's not going to be.
Okay.
It's serious. Hey, Kaitagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahare. That's Distant Thunder, Wendy. Mm-hmm. And my colonized name, taxpayer's name is Robert Pilot. Mm-hmm. And we discuss Native issues on this show, Native-centric issues. We do a lot of different stuff. So, you know, Native issues are human issues and Native. Can we?
No, this is live.
I'm kidding.
I'm going to tell everybody what's going on here in just a minute. But this portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You could call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
When are they open? No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't tell you to start drinking yet.
Oh, okay.
So Robert is in the middle of drinking his preparation for his colonoscopy tomorrow. So there's my alarm. Start drinking. So he has to drink 8 ounces of this every 10 minutes. And he's got to do it 12 times. So we're finishing up now, and we're just going to keep the timer going. So you're going to be hearing the alarm going off every 10 minutes during the show, and then Robert has to drink the prep. And he might be running out of the studio here any minute, but we don't really know that yet. But we are promoting good colon health. So if you are at the age where you should be getting your colonoscopy, just do it.
This is my second one.
It really will prevent a lot of death and problems. It's preventative. And women and men, and if you have a history of colon cancer in your family, talk to your doctor about when you should be getting your colonoscopy. So that's what we're doing here on the show today.
Wendy, if you Google that up too, the Native Americans on a serious note, yes. Native Americans are a high proportion per capita of mm-hmm. deaths of colon. So
yes, colon cancer. Absolutely. So please get that done.
So now that we've done the TMI, too much information, why don't mm-hmm. we go to the news today and see, maybe I'm in the news too. So Ogama, welcome, and it's Ogama with the news.
Hi, Anim Bujo, everybody. It's Ogama Ganuakwe with Native Roots Radio, sending my best over to Robert and Wendy as they prepare for the colonoscopy today. My prayers are with you guys. Yeah, this is going to be a giggly show. The big thing that I want to touch on for tomorrow, there are more than 100 events around the world tomorrow for defunding Line 3. Tomorrow is the Global Day of Action to defund Line 3. You can find one near you at actionnetwork.org under the Defund Line 3 tab. They are targeting banks and asset managers, providing critical financial aid to build Line 3 on Friday, May 7th. There are events all over the U.S., and there's even a few in South America and other countries. If you don't have one near you, you can organize one and put it on the map. You have about 24 hours to do it, so make sure you can get on there if you are a quick organizer. Target banks include Chase, Citi, Bank of America, RBC, and TD, and the target asset manager is BlackRock. If you are in Minnesota tomorrow, Friday at 10 a.m., the Defund Line 3 Global Day of Action event will be held in Duluth, and that is going to be at the Wells Fargo Bank on Arrowhead Road. They're gathering at 10 a.m., and they're going to be spreading awareness and calling on all banks to stop funding tar sands and other projects like Line 3 that are very damaging to our environment. All are encouraged to bring art and signs, and please follow COVID-19 restrictions. As far as other upcoming events, make sure you mark your calendars for a road trip to Michigan next week on May 12th through 13th is the eviction of Enbridge from the Mackinac Straits. That event is hosted by Mackinac O'Day. I know Winona LaDuke is going to be there. There's a bit of a solidarivan, as Andy from MN350 put it, of people going over to help support. And I believe the Giant Puppets are going to be there. You can sign up for more information at oilandwaterdontmix.org/events. The other big event to put on your calendar is June 5th through 8th to come to northern Minnesota if you don't already live there for the Treaty People Gathering. More information on that is to come, but sign up at treatypeoplegathering.com. Coming up next Tuesday, May 11th in the Twin Cities in St. Paul, Take Action Minnesota is hosting an art build. They are preparing for metro area action and will be making signs, banners, and more. They will have supplies there for you, and this is in preparation for the construction of Enbridge's Line 3, which is set to ramp up again around June 1st. Wear clothes that are comfortable and that you can get paint on. It's going to be an artistic event. So if you're going to show up in St. Paul on May 11th at Take Action Minnesota at 705 Raymond Avenue from 3 to 7 p.m. for an art build, make sure you wear comfortable clothes and practice COVID precautions. The city of Minneapolis is also... they put out a public art call today for a Waterworks public art project, which is honoring two Dakota sites. One is known as St. Anthony Falls, and the other is Spirit Island. Both were destroyed in the late 1960s to make way for the lock and dam site. I apologize to all my Dakota relatives. I cannot pronounce the traditional name for St. Anthony Falls or Spirit Island. I am Ojibwe, and I can... I struggle with my own language, so I apologize and I will work on that going forward. But if you would like to sign up to collaborate with the city to create a public artwork to be incorporated into the Minneapolis Park and Boards, Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board's new park, which is going to be located in the Mill Runes Park overlooking St. Anthony Falls, check out Native Roots Radio. We did share that link. Questions on it are due to an Ann Godfrey by 4 p.m. on Monday, May 17th, which I believe is also the day that taxes are due this year. Right, Robert? They pushed that April 15th date back.
We're good. Right, Wendy?
Yeah, it is May 15th. Yes, that's right. You are right.
Okay. And that's 9 days before my birthday.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of COVID precautions, from the previous event that I was just talking about with the art build, today, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz announced that the mask wearing mandate for public indoor spaces is going to end no later than July 1st in Minnesota, and COVID-19 restrictions on business capacities will end May 28th. However, they did stipulate that the mask wearing requirement could be lifted before July 1st if the state can increase the rate of Minnesotans who have received the COVID-19 vaccine from the current 59% to 70%. The vaccines are kind of taking up slowly in Minnesota, but Walz said during the press conference today, "Let's go get it done and end this thing." And that is a direct quote from the press conference today. And I do have to say I share his sentiment. All capacity and distancing limits for indoor events and gatherings will end on May 28th under the plan. However, indoor and outdoor events involving more than 500 people, such as Minnesota Twins games, will still require masks. So that is exciting. In other news, Teton Saltz from the Pine Ridge Reservation has signed with New York for the New York Jets and is in orientation right now for the team. So congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, right. Go get vaccinated. We can live in a safe, maskless society again if everyone gets vaccinated.
Right, and so, if they do by the fair time, I'm going to the fair.
Yeah,
and we'll be live exactly. At Native Roots Radio at the fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody needs to get vaccinated. So if you don't want to be responsible for transmitting a strain of COVID that the already vaccinated people, that vaccine is not going to work. So you don't want to be responsible for that. So go get vaccinated and keep everybody safe, including the people who are already vaccinated.
And there you go. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And up next, Robert Lilligren. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You don't need to live in the Twin Cities or Minnesota to call them.
Right. Hey, yeah. It's been working really well. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have Robert Lilligren on last week, and we really missed him.
Mm-hmm.
So we... are going to have him on this week.
And, yeah, definitely. And so, Robert Lilligren is the director of
Native American. Well, let me check my notes, Wendy.
NATCE.
Yeah.
NATCE.
So it's Native American Community Development Institute.
Okay. That's a mouthful.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Very powerful group. And, you mm-hmm. know, we're, why don't we jump with them right now? Welcome, Robert. And then we're always really excited to have Robert Lilligren. He's the director of the Native American Community Development Institute, and we missed him last week, Wendy.
Yeah, that's okay. He's here today.
All right, welcome,
it's
Robert.
Good to be missed. Yeah, thanks, Robert. Thanks, Wendy. Bonjour. It's good to be missed.
Wow, so a lot's been going on. We have a lot to talk about, and so little time, but can you tell us a little bit about what you did while you were gone? I know there's a misnomer out there, and I want to get you to officially say what you really did.
Let's correct the record. Well, I was up on the North Shore. You know, my husband and I take at least two trips up there, usually more every year, one in the spring, one in the winter. And the one in the spring always happens in April. And April, there's this online event that's called 30 Days of Biking, #30 Days of Biking. And you commit to biking every day in April. And so sometimes for me, that's just a little trip around the block or a bike ride to the grocery store or something like that. But so I was completing my 30 days of biking during April. And it's kind of a cool event. 30 days. It was my 10th year doing it, my 10th year in a row.
Did a lot of your activism started with the Greenway and the biking, didn't it?
Good memory, Robert. Yeah. So I never owned a car, briefly owned a car in my adulthood. I'm a walker, bike commuter, and mostly and transit rider. And so, yes, I was very involved in activism. Opposing freeway expansion is kind of what really activated me back in the way back in the last century. And, you know, the impact of freeways and car traffic, you know, fall most heavily on brown and black people and mm-hmm. the health impacts and the, you know, the building freeways, Rondo neighborhood in St.
Right.
Paul are a perfect example, plows right through BIPOC neighborhoods. And so that did kind of activate me. And so then I was on city council here in Minneapolis back in 2010. When 30 Days of Biking first started, seems so long ago. And I thought I started right here in Minneapolis. It's since expanded internationally. And so I started doing it in 2011, the 30 Days of Biking in April. And so I post about it on Facebook. That's what you put it on social media and stuff. And since I was up on the North Shore, I did this retrospective of my last 10 years. Mm. And it gave a lot of people the impression that I biked up to the North Shore.
What I was thinking, Robert. And do you have a fancy bicycle, or what kind of bicycle do you
have? You know, it's not that fancy. I've got, I don't know if I can mention a brand name. It's called Estivia. It's a company that's located here in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. They do their fabrication, I think, manufacturing in offshore, but then assemble and sell here. And it's they're bikes that are designed to be built to ride around the neighborhood.
Nice.
You know, my bike is actually called Neighborhood Bike or something is the design, and I just love it. It looks kind of like a Danish bike for those who bike. It's just very practical, and it gets me from here to there. And I'm a regular bike commuter. I'm in my office on East Franklin right now. I biked here today a bike back home. So
nice.
It's funny when you were struggling with what decade you were a city council member. I thought 1970s was like 30 years ago, no. But 1990s was. It's like what the heck happened?
What happened? Where'd that go? So I did get elected to the city council in 2001, but 30 days of biking didn't start until 2010.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great event. It gets people out and moving.
Yeah, it gets me to tune up my bike and gets me a little bit in shape. The first few bike rides, I'll tell you, it's like, okay, I haven't biked for a while. I get kind of huffy puffy on those.
Hey, so it's interesting too, like we were talking a little bit before we came on, was that you have had a meeting today and kind of one of those governmental meetings with the lieutenant governor and the governor. Can you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Robert. And so this is a regular call and meeting that we have with the governor's office. It doesn't always include the governor or the lieutenant governor, but it's with heads of urban Indian organizations, you know, non-reservation-based Native organizations in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, Bemidji. And we get together regularly, I think for every 2 weeks, and sort of raise the issues that we're facing in the urban community, seek solutions. Today, the governor was there and the lieutenant governor talking about the budget. You know, they're in the last 10 days of the budget stretch. And so a lot of moving parts and a lot of urgency. But so there was a lot of folks on this call, probably like 30 or 40 people. And you know, and I was really impressed with something Governor Walz said about the budget. He described it as a moral document. Mm-hmm. And that I liked that, you know, and it's a huge piece of policy. It reflects our values, our priorities, and he was really clear that a lot of the burden of this last year has fallen on BIPOC communities and Native communities, and that's where the focus of investment should be, especially with these federal dollars that are coming into the state. And one of the concerns Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan expressed was that these federal dollars should be invested in Indigenous communities of color, and there's this movement towards sort of investing in communities that weren't as negatively impacted by COVID. These are resiliency dollars, and sort of offsetting money, investing in communities that weren't impacted. Yeah, and it was really BIPOC communities that were most impacted by COVID. These federal funds coming down are to invest in recovery, and the governor was really passionate about making sure that those dollars go into communities that were most impacted by COVID, like the Native communities, and they're not just used to sort of offset dollars that other communities in our state are unwilling to invest at the state level. And so I was really impressed.
It is impressive. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about some more things if you have some time, but I want to just leave with this before we get into the next segment, Robert, is that when I was at the Capitol yesterday, and I want to leave everyone with this statement.
Yeah.
And it was the Red Dress Day, MMIWR, Missing Murdered Indigenous Relatives, a ceremony, celebration, all these beautiful, Rory made all these red dresses. There were thousands of them.
Yeah,
but I want to say this to end this segment is that a state representative, Heather Keeler, said this when she spoke. She said that, "I've already told my sons that if I ever go missing or die, I did not do it myself. I did not commit suicide. I will never commit suicide." And so that was really heavy, along with the names. But we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back in the next segment. Yeah, Wendy, that is powerful.
That is Heather really said. Powerful because, you know, when Mary Kunish was on the show, Senator Mary Kunish was on the show. Was she on yesterday? Yeah, she was on yesterday after the event.
Right.
You know, she was saying that these women and young men and go missing. And then when their bodies are found, it's just put down as a suicide or, you know, unknown death or whatever. But a lot of them are put down as marked down as suicide. So she made a really good point saying to her sons that, you know, this will not happen. I will never commit suicide. So, you know that something bad happened to me and try to find out.
Right. Hey, do you have something to say, Ogama?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I've told my family the same thing, and I think they almost thought it was a little bit overdramatic, but, you know, if I ever go missing, I did not choose to leave. I didn't abandon my family. You know, those kinds of things are not something that I would ever do. So if I am missing, there's something wrong.
Or commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And that was super powerful because that's what they tell us right away. This person committed suicide, this person did this, and really it was...
And it's really sad for the families to even think that their loved one would commit suicide, you know, and like them in that way.
Right,
you know?
And I think that what happens when is a lot of times the family knows that their person wouldn't, but if the police or the authorities are saying it looks like a suicide, that's why that statement was so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, more of Robert Lilligren. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice, and the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Who helped put that on yesterday?
That's right.
And what a great time, even with the rain. It was raining a little bit. And all over the nation, Wendy, that happened.
I know.
The Red Dress Day, missing and murdered Indigenous relatives.
It's really good that is an event every year. And there's so much awareness every year brought about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, we got Robert Lilligren on, and welcome back, Robert.
Thanks for being back on, Robert. I know you're a busy person, but we really appreciate your time and what you do for our community. So there's a couple other things. I guess I ended it with talking about the Red Dress group happenings at the Capitol. What was what have you heard? I know you wanted to speak upon it too a little bit.
Yeah, well, I couldn't be there, which I was just sick about, but I saw a lot of stuff on social media. It was that Rory Wakeham's community arts piece had just such impact. And, you know, they worked on those red dresses at the Minneapolis American Indian Center here on Franklin, the American Indian Cultural Corridor. And then on Monday, May 3rd, I guess that would have been, we had a kickoff event for Minnesota Indian Month.
Yes.
It's Indian Month here in Minnesota. So we started at Little Earth of United Tribes, that wonderful community in South Minneapolis, and had a beautiful kickoff event where youth told their stories. And, just beautiful stories that our youth were telling to the community. Last year, we couldn't gather, of course.
Right.
And, you know, usually it's a huge event, maybe 300 to 500 people. And this year, they're probably about, 80 maybe, 80 people, which looked good to me. And then we went to the Indian Center for some more, for a feast. And Rory had the community working on those those dresses that he used there. Wow. And that had such impact.
Well, that's interesting, too, because we had Dr. Stately on Mondays, and he talked mm-hmm. about that, too. And he also talked about Sheriff Hutch running around there with a big medallion on his chest, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's got that big sheriff medallion, you know. And
we gave it to him.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. And that's a great story, right? The Hennepin County Sheriff, yeah. Sheriff Hutch, an elected official, elected in the largest county in Minnesota, and we had a very unfriendly sheriff there before. And, you know, we do a lot of voter engagement and voter outreach here at my the organization I work for, Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI. And, you know, if you look at Sheriff Hutch's margin of victory yep. in his election, which was kind of an upset, kind of a surprise, and I know you guys are really involved in it, mm-hmm. but it's pretty much exactly the number of Native voters here in the county.
Wow.
So you can claim, you know, we put him over, and he's just been really great with the Native community. It's such a change from
right. And we're going to have him on again because there's been some bumps in the roads, and he's a leader, and he needs to take his shots and things like that. But yeah. we really love him over here at Native Roots Radio. And I know a lot of people in the Native community really like him. So we're going to have him on again now that the dust has settled a little bit here.
Sure.
But yeah, you know.
You got to hold him accountable.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And he knows that. So, well, there's other things too that you've experienced this week too. And can you talk a little bit about that gathering you had with one great Ho-Chunk woman here? Marlene?
Marlene Hegemol, yeah. So Marlene is one of the elders that I go to for guidance regularly, as is Sharon Day. People mm-hmm. may know her, a Ojibwe woman. She's a spiritual leader, and she does a water walk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very high profile. She's an amazing person, my way, actually. And so she, they invited a lot of leadership from down here in the Twin Cities up to Sharon's retreat center that she's establishing up around Center City, Minnesota, and around a fire all day, ceremony, songs, prayers, and then really sharing, deep sharing. It was amazing, and starting to shape what, you know, we want for the community for the next 3 to 5 years. And there's a lot of resources that are coming in from the federal level, mm-hmm. state level, and more recognition of what the urban Indian community is. And what we're doing here. And you know, and I gotta say, we've been really deliberate here over the last maybe 7 years or so to come together as leadership of urban Indian organizations and to try to shed the yoke of colonization mm-hmm. that encourages us to view each other as competitors for resources and competitors for social or for service populations, and to work collaboratively and collectively. And so and we've made some progress, you know, and having people like Marlene, like Sharon, you know, kind of bringing us up there. In Marlene's case, it's more like ordering us up there. You know, yeah. When Marlene tells you to do something, you do it.
That's right.
So it was a really special day. It was a great group, maybe a dozen or so, you know, and around a circle, around a fire. And we can't help but make progress when we're willing to sit like that, indigenize our relationships and the way we do business. It was powerful.
Sounds like powerful. Like the old days of the lodge, you know.
Exactly. And Marlene, Sharon, others too, they are being really really deliberate about introducing old ways in the 21st century context, you know, and so it's good. It's my second time up to that a spiritual retreat center that Sharon has, and both experiences were tremendously powerful and really important, significant to me.
Yeah, it does sound that way. And I know, wasn't Sharon the one that did the Nibby song, the water song? Isn't she the one that wrote that song?
I think it was her sister that actually wrote it, I think.
That's right. Powerful family.
Very powerful family, powerful women.
Wow. So what else is going on in Minneapolis? We're here with Robert Lilligren, who's Native American Community Development Institute, NADCI director. And we're always pleased to have him on every week and talk about national and local Native issues. And as we always say in the beginning of the show, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You're here. Well, the one big thing I really want to lift up, in part because it relates to the organization I work for, but just in part because I think it's a cool thing. And something happened here in Minnesota recently. You know, there was the apportionment of congressional seats, you know, and that happens after every census.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota is always on the bubble of losing one of our 8 congressional seats. And that's a big deal
mm-hmm.
to lose that. And we retained ours. We retained our 8th congressional seat by counting 89 people. That's how close it was. That's how close we were to losing the seat.
Yeah.
And here at NACDI, we have a project called Make Voting a Tradition. It's been around for 7 or 8 years. Voter engagement, year-round voter engagement,
mm-hmm.
and it was through Make Voting a Tradition that we overlaid our census outreach, and they did amazing work here. I think they counted maybe 1,200 or 1,400 wow. urban Indians right here in the community, and I don't know if folks remember this, but under the previous of the Trump administration, there was this movement to cut the census off early. Okay, I did early. It just came kind of out of the blue. Mm-hmm. When all of a sudden we learned we were going to possibly end the census early, our Make Voting a Tradition folks went out and just did a blitz. And I think in one that one day they counted 90 more urban Indian people here. And so when you look at the fact that we retained our congressional seat by only 89 people, I like to say we did it.
Did
our Native community saved our congressional seat here in Minnesota.
You did
do
it. We
should celebrate that.
Yeah, well, we can. And people like New York and California that have lost seats. So it's really a pleasant surprise and a good thing for Minnesota. Sure. And organizations like yours that really... work hard to engage our community, and it's working, obviously.
Yep. And then you look at things, you know, we're not a lot of people, but we can swing votes. We can swing elections with our votes. We can save congressional seats. You know, we have power.
Yep. We definitely do. Well, Robert, I know you need to get going here. So
yeah,
we really appreciate you stopping in here, and we can't wait to see you again next week.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I always enjoy it. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Wendy.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
Take it easy.
Thank you so much, Robert Lilligren. Wow, Wendy, that was just awesome.
Yeah, he's great. I really think he's fantastic. And I know he talked about a lot of things and a lot of important things.
Right.
But I want to do that bicycle thing in April, the 30 days of biking.
It's too late. It's May.
Next year.
Oh, okay.
Next year. We'll get ready and I'll practice my biking because I haven't been on a bike in like, I don't know, 50 years. No, seriously. I don't think I've been on a bike in 50 years.
I saw you on that red one speed in the alley.
I went in the alley. I was afraid I was going to fall. I need to get a helmet though too.
Right. And some knee pads and shoulder pads. And
exactly. I do.
I'm a delicate flower now, so I need to be careful.
Yeah, we both need to be careful. We're at that age.
I fell out of a door a little while ago too.
You did?
Yeah.
Today?
Over at Dee Dee's.
Oh, I know. Yeah, right onto the ground, right onto the cement. I was having a nightmare.
Yeah. Hey, so Ogama, why don't you just mention that with 30 more seconds here left. You're talking about this big event on May 12th and 13th that I might even go to, Wendy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So on May 12th and 13th is the Evict Enbridge event in Northern Michigan. It is at oilandwaterdontmix.org. /events. You can get more information there. There's going to be a lot of really cool people there. Winona LaDuke is coming, a lot of solidarity speakers, and that is to stop or shut down Line 5 underneath the Straits of Mackinac in Northern Michigan, and solidarity, as always, with the Stop Line 3 and No Dapple crew.
Yeah, that's a good, that was perfect timing. Wow. So up next, Wendy, what's happening? Tell me what's happening.
Well, I'm going to be talking about the Kentucky Derby and racehorsing, and a couple of things I learned just kind of reading a couple of articles about it that I didn't know.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's going to be a positive.
Oh, it's going to be so positive.
Right on. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. And what we are, we're joking around right now, but we're going to talk about some serious animal issues, and as you all know, we our animals are our relatives, and so we speak highly upon our animals. And when there's stupid wolf hunts and killings for no reason, mm-hmm. just for the heck of it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Robert's a little bit off today.
Yeah. Ogama might have to jump in and might be a two-person show here
that's
in a minute.
That's all right. That's okay. We all know, animals are our sacred beings, and we talk about them all the time. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, so I work on animal issues at the local and state level.
It also says that you're my awesome and beautiful wife here on this piece of paper.
Thank you for saying
right
that, Robert.
Me.
Yeah. So as everybody knows, the alarm's probably going to go off in the middle of my segment, but that's Robert's cue to start finishing up his prep because he's having his colonoscopy tomorrow. So we want to promote good colon health. So go get your colon checked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So Robert's a little off. That's okay. So I wanted to talk about horse racing. And the reason why is because the Kentucky Derby just happened on May 1st. If you don't know this, and I didn't know this, between 700 and 800 racehorses are injured and die every year, with a national average of about 2 breakdowns for every 1,000 starts. According to the Jockey Club's equine injury database, nearly 10 horses die every week at American racetracks, and that was documented in 2018. You know, and there was also a couple of things that I didn't know about. You know, when the jockey's on the horse and they're going around the track and the jockey is whipping the horse. I didn't know this, but there's rules about how many times the jockey is allowed to whip the horse.
That must be new.
You think it's new?
I mean, newer, you know.
I've never heard of that. But again, I don't know that much about horses. If anybody on Facebook Live watching us or anybody wants to call in to let us know that I don't know what I'm talking about, please do so. There are rules about how many times a jockey can whip a horse. Currently, the maximum is 7 times in a flat race and 8 times in a jump race. The purpose of the jockey's whip is to make the horse run faster, right, and to maintain speed when tiring towards the end of the race. Whipping the horses over and over again inflicts physical and psychological pain and increases the likelihood of injury. Somehow the racing industry has escaped accountability for this blatant act of animal cruelty. Under current animal cruelty legislation, the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, if the same routine treatment was inflicted on a horse outside the racetrack, the perpetrator would almost certainly be prosecuted. So it's okay on the racetrack, but if anybody was doing that to a horse off the racetrack, they would be in big trouble. So it really, and you know what? I read also that I didn't know this. I thought that the jockeys whip the horse's butt, like the side of their hip, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what it looks like when they're racing?
Neck.
You know what it is? It's their face.
What?
Yeah. As jockeys are constantly whipping the horse's face to get them to go faster, many of them also experience eye hemorrhaging as well as other painful facial injuries. And because the hard packed dirt on the racetrack is so unforgiving, many of the horses end up fracturing or breaking bones, which has which, as constantly mobile creatures, makes recovery pretty much impossible, according to the wild-hearted, and many of them are simply just killed on the spot. So on most of these racetracks, what they have is like, you know, like a big tent. So if a horse falls or breaks a limb, they come very, very quickly. They get the horse right on the flatbed really, really quickly. They, you know, stick it. Oh, there you go, Robert. That's your timer.
Oh, joy.
It's time. Oh, he's got to drink up his last... he's drinking.
Here's to me. Here's you. If we disagree, here's to me.
Yeah, I know. You know, this industry, though, is so glamorized. You know, it's mostly... associated with fancy hats that women wear and lots of money. So let's mark off that last one. Now you have only one, a half of one to drink.
A half of one.
Yeah, so after you finish that, pour a half a glass in there. So the poor Robert has to have his prep here. But anyway, so there was a trainer here. Her name is Gina Rarick. She's a well-known American trainer. She's currently working in France. She is also a frequent critic of U.S. racing, and she wrote the following on her Facebook page about the Kentucky Derby. Quote, It's Kentucky Derby week in America, and while I would like to appreciate the buzz that attracts people to the sport that normally wouldn't pay any attention, I cannot find much anything positive to say. The photos of the horses are making my head explode. Every horse is held down with so much equipment, it makes my mouth bleed just watching. Lip Shanks, and this is another thing that I didn't know anything about. Lip Shanks, doubled with crossed nose bands and sometimes tongue ties and more on every one, every single one. One trainer proudly posted a video of loading a horse to go to the Kentucky Derby. It took a lip shank, four people, and a broom to get the job done. I would be humiliated if a post a video like that was about me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then in response to a question on what a lip shank is, I had no idea. I never heard of anything. But again, I don't know anything about horses. It's a chain that goes around the head collar and is placed between the teeth and the upper lip. So pulling it tight is supposed to have an effect, sort of like a twitch. If you see some of the Derby horses walking, they are being held down like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day balloon. They can't take one natural step. What you see below, and then there was a picture of this poor horse with one of these tongue ties. A tongue, and then it goes on to tell you what the tongue tied is. And oh, I have an updated related deaths. According to a 2019 report in the Courier Journal, there were 237 race-related horse deaths logged by the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission between 2010 and June 25th, 2019, and 203 of those deaths, about 85%, included some sort of fracture. The other deaths were attributed to other problems like soft tissue injuries and heart failure. Yeah, oh, thank you, Ogama, for putting that up. But Kentucky doesn't require records of horse deaths, so it's unclear if those numbers are correct. According to NPR, it's assumed that horses die in training in the state of Kentucky, though the horses' names, trainers, and exact circumstances isn't public record. It makes it so the trainers and owners aren't put in a competitive disadvantage, making it more difficult to hold them accountable. So, yeah, thank you, Ogama, again, for putting that. It looks like a very painful thing for the horse. She's putting, Ogama, if you're watching us on Facebook.
And YouTube.
And YouTube and our other social media, what these look like. Yeah, it's very painful for the horse. They're whipped during the racing. You know, they're given drugs, and it's just a horrible thing. So please do not support horse racing. And if you know people who do, just try and talk with them and tell them not to support horse racing.
Thanks for those updates. And really, knowledge is power. So I really appreciate that. Our relatives need to be saved, just like everybody else, with hooves, tails, and fins. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is our sacred ground. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Pelletier.
Stop line three.